What is going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Sour and Sass. Today, I am very happy to be joined by the head of demand generation in Europe, Adam Holmgren. Welcome to the show, Adam.
Nice to meet you. Nice to be here.
Excited to have you, man. I'm very excited to be interviewing someone based in Europe. I did an interview with someone based in Israel, which was a good interview, but I'm excited to interview someone from Europe because, and I want to start right here, every US brand in the world does this thing. And what this thing is, and they come to us, and this is what they do. They say, hey, Directive, we want to partner with you, but can you tell them about your team in EMEA? And they make a big stink out of Europe, but when we get to business and we got to do budget, they don't spend more than like 10%, if we're being honest, on Europe. And they're not that effective at it. So, in your mind, what's the biggest mistake these US SaaS companies make when trying to enter the European market? And like, where do you think they go wrong?
Yeah, you know, I think I can start with one of the biggest mistakes we do when we enter the US. Then we can go back. Yeah, but I think we are, in general, very much, we are trying to be very nice people here in Europe, trying to be nice to everyone. So when we enter the US, we're coming in there with like, with these ads. Yeah, you can look at them if you like, but we aren't going to force them down your throat. And US, on the other hand, is coming to Europe with this, with all these drums, with everything they've got. And we don't like that, to be honest. we want to have 50 minutes of chit chat before getting to action. And the other way around in the US, I guess, is let's just talk about business. So I think that's very funny, actually. We talk about that a lot in the team. We have a US based team, and then we have our EMA team, of course. It's very funny.
I love that. Now it is sour and sass. So let's start some sour candy and we're going to unpack this a little bit more. Are you ready?
Yeah, let's do it for sure. Oh God. And mine are also super sour. So I think that's even worse.
Yeah. That's really sour. Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
So let's translate, get down to business drums as direct response. In other words, a lot of American SaaS companies, their demand gen is very direct response driven.
Yeah.
So what I mean by that is, you know, we're going to enter the Europe market. We're going to build out our top, you know, 500 accounts we want to break into. And then we're going to start sending them gifts. We're going to start sending them gift cards to hop on calls. And we're going to be very aggressive.
Yeah.
What do you think a better way? Like, what's the relational European get to know you style of advertising as a campaign? Can you translate that into a campaign for me so I can better understand kind of subtlety?
Yeah. I think for sure we as European, it's funny that I talk for all European people when I live in Sweden. but I would say we are very much in the search of relationships at all times. I would say that communities are a big thing in like everything. As we've talked about in the past, clubs, we are trying to be a part of something to feel a purpose, I guess. And also in the business world, we have so many different communities in SaaS, in sales, in marketing, which is also, of course, growing to become a big thing in the US with Pavilion and all of those kind of communities. But we have a lot more niche communities in our markets, I would say. So campaigning towards them and getting into them is really something that would drive a lot of business, I'm sure. And so also drive a lot of word of mouth, you know. I think that's a lot of people are missing that. You know, we talk a lot about getting into the dark funnel and getting into dark social and all of that, but it all starts somewhere. And I think that is in the communities for the European markets for sure.
This is brilliant, Adam, and I've never got to talk to you about this, and we do suck at this, and there's not a good amount, there's no content on this, so I want to stay on this track for a second, because this is a really important thing for SaaS organizations. So I'm going to make it more specific and kind of tactical, and you can tell me good or bad. And I think this will help people understand this. So at Directive, I'll just use myself as an example. I have Society. It's a Slack group. It's really cool. People are a part of it, and we help each other. Like, I'm in there every day answering questions, like providing insight. And it's actually been a huge part of our marketing. So I totally agree with community. Now, if I'm a SaaS company and I kind of have, let's say, my developer community or my, in your case, sales community, and I'm a US-based organization, do the European markets want to be a part of a global community, or should I build a European community? And then, because like, I know how I could advertise this, right? Like, you know, join Society, a group of demand gen marketers from all around the globe sharing ideas, insights, and it could be, and I can make that my first campaign. And then if people interact with it, I could retarget them direct response and kind of stay communal and then ask. Should I make a separate EMEA community, or do you think I could use my American community in EMEA if I'm a SaaS marketer trying to?
No, I actually think that would work perfectly. I think we usually in Europe, we look up to America a lot. I would say, especially in marketing, I would say that you are miles ahead of us. If we look at, let's take demand gen, for example, that's a concept that, I don't know, it's existed in Europe for maybe 1-2 years, but several more years in the US, you know, it's getting old. So I think we are always a couple of steps behind. So I think we're always looking to where can we learn the next stuff, you know, and usually that's US we turn to.
Well, it's nothing, and it's not the talent of the marketer there. It's more the regulatory environment and the lack of funding, correct? And so that's what's driving the lag between the two markets.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's getting better, of course. We are getting a lot of companies now coming from Europe, going into unicorns, right? But there have been a lag for sure. I'm pretty sure. I would say, however, that we are also, at least in some countries, are very local. You know, a French person would probably prefer a French community. For sure. Mm-hmm. So it's very dependent on the market, I would say. Probably the same Germany. But in Sweden, we would for sure be up for going into a US community.
That's very, very interesting. And I love you saying this. Like, I'm just, so you know, I'm going to save this part of the interview and I'm going to share it with my team as well, because I think we are kind of, I think, you know, dumb Americans sometimes when we think like, well, this is how we do it here. It'll work there. And then the campaign launches, and then, you know, the irony is we base our failure off of like localization. We think, well, the copy isn't translating. I'd say it's the approach that's not translating more than it is the message or the words. We think it's that we're not translating it into the Swedish dichotomy correctly, instead of us not translating it into the Swedish business culture correctly.
You kind of see what I'm saying. I think it's the same. I think it's the exact same thing when we enter new markets in Europe, since every market is completely different. Take when we just entered the UK, for example, completely different market to Sweden, to France, more similar to the US. We could be more aggressive, but we weren't in the beginning. So I think every time we enter a new market in Europe, we have to have feet on the ground to know the culture, to really make an impact. The same when we enter US, of course, we need people there to make sure that, we're getting it right.
That's brilliant. And I think the part, you know, we think too, I think beyond just the approach and the methodology, I'd like to unpack the channels. When you think about EMEA, what are the channels to you that are best at driving revenue in Europe? So, because here, I think the default is, right, if you give someone $100, let's just use it as a simple number, right? If I give $100 to a SaaS company in America, they're going to go 70% Google Ads. They're going to go 20% LinkedIn, and then 10% something else when it comes to digital.
Yeah.
Maybe 10% review sites or something like that. Maybe it's a little more balanced, but you kind of get the idea. It's usually Google Ads is the default. Everything else is a fraction. How does it work in your mind? What's most effective?
Yeah, of course, Google Ads is effective, but I would say in the long run for us, the brand, to put dollars on our brand, to develop that and to build that brand awareness is really what's most important, I would say. Because that
How are you thinking about that? Is that field marketing? Is that out of office? Is that TV commercials? What, when you say brand advertising, as a European, what does brand advertising translate to you digitally?
Yeah, I would say mostly field marketing and communities is where the big magic happens. When GetAccept started, you know, everything we did was to go to events and to, and usually, yeah, we didn't have a lot of money back then. So usually instead of, you know, sponsoring events, which is super expensive these days, we just went to this event with our crazy suits that we have to stand out and, yeah, and like, and crashed events. And these are kind of now when we actually have the funds to sponsor events, we need to sometimes get back to basics and just crash the event. Yeah, make a point to stand out, serve coffee in the line, you know, all of these kinds of, because today to sponsor an event, to pay, I don't know, 50 grand, sometimes it's like, it's crazy.
No, I agree. And I think you're, it's so funny that sometimes money can neuter marketing, because we have a mantra at Directive. Everything has to be shockingly memorable, financially validated, and strategically aligned for the next 36 months. Yeah. And I found that the bigger you get and the more successful you are, the harder it is to keep to your roots and stay shockingly memorable. And it sounds like being shockingly memorable, it was such a part of your journey to success. How are you trying to keep that edge, even though you all are such a bigger team now?
I would say that we have a very similar vision where we are trying to be crazy differently, and in that sense, I think sometimes budget is hurting you being creative. Budget is kind of making you, you are able to spend more in these regular channels like paid ads, where you could be creative and crazy differently to, you know, yeah, to do cool stuff that doesn't have to cost a lot of money. So I think that's where we are trying to go a bit back to basics in our marketing team, to be honest. It's a journey, starting with nothing, getting a lot, going back to how we were before.
I love that. Now, are you ready for another piece? Can you keep it going?
Bring it.
Okay. I got to get ready. All right. So sour. Now, before we started, you and I had a great chance to connect. You talked about going from 3 marketers to 25.
Yeah.
And we talked a lot about systems and processes, trying to do that. What's the biggest thing? Well, I guess it's a 2-part question. We'll get to like, what's the thing you're still figuring out? But like, what's the thing that just shocked you? Like, what's the thing that you, like, in your mind, never forecasted, like, how much this part would change, or how much harder this got, or how much you just were just surprised by how different it was going from 3 to 25 people? Like, what was that biggest outlier that you didn't forecast?
I would say that initially when you think about getting more people, is that you initially think that, okay, we're going to get so much more done. and to be honest, that's not always true. What is true, however, I would say, is that we are doing everything so much better, of course, since we have, you know, so much specialties in all these kind of knowledge bases. But I wouldn't say that we are getting more done. So that was probably my initial thought that didn't happen really.
No, I love that. It's such a funny thought, because I think we all think that, right? Like, we got 2 riders, we're doing 10 pieces. If we had 5 more riders, we're going to do 50, 60 pieces. Yeah. And you end up doing like 13 pieces. Now, I think those 13 end up working a lot better. Yeah, but exactly. I think you're right. We think we're going to get breadth, but I think headcount oftentimes equals depth. And we don't think that going in. What's the part you're still trying to figure out? What's the part where you're like, if I'm not feeling like we're fully there yet with our team as a group? And what is that thing you're trying to figure out? And what are you doing about it?
I think the hard part when we are getting growing from a few to many people is, okay, how do we still stay agile and flexible as a team, but we still need to have processes in place to be able to make sure that who does what, then what do we do, and what strategy do we have, and so on. So I think that is really what we are still figuring out, to be honest, in the team. Because everyone is super competent in their respective field. But if you're only like allowed to do things in your certain area, yeah, that is not like an environment for creativity, I think. I think we need to be able to work, you know, cross-function also in the marketing teams. So I think that is still something we're working out, to be honest.
No, I love that. In other words, what you're trying to say is you want this exponential leverage. You want each headcount to create exponential leverage, but instead sometimes just creating more individual focus. So how do we compound it? Now, in, you know, I would say most marketing organizations, the culture is an output of the meetings they do on a weekly cadence, which is the input. So can you tell me something about the meetings that you built initially at, like, when you kind of started scaling from 3 to 25 people, what the meetings of your marketing team every week was like, which meetings you kept, which meetings you got rid of, and how you try to meet as a group culturally and kind of how you think about that cadence?
Yeah, I think that's a hard thing when you're growing, right? You're used to having these meetings where everyone is just listing everything they are doing to everyone. When you're 25 people, and I know we tried that in the beginning, that's a couple of hours.
It's like a show and tell that takes half the day, and you're like, all right, guys, this was not. And then nobody really cares because it's like, I'm doing this
no,
other thing.
No, exactly. Exactly. So, for me, I think the key here was we have different teams in the marketing team, of course. They have their separate meetings to go, you know, through the strategies and the day-to-days. And then the leads in each team have their get-together meeting where we actually share what's happening all around. And of course, we have, you know, briefs with the entire team and so on, where we talk about numbers and stuff that is happening more on a high level. But I think when we get down to the nitty-gritty, we do it more in the smaller teams, which I think is really key, to be honest.
I like that. So you almost have pods within the group that are all working together. That's very interesting. Now,
for sure.
You know, SEO, organic content marketing, still a big part of how most organizations are going to market in Europe, in EMEA, and I as their spokesperson for all of Europe. what do you think we don't understand? And in other words, like, does the European reader want to read a long blog post, a short blog post? Do they want a more of a resource? Do they want hefty and they want to take their time? Do they want video? Do they want audio? How are you thinking about really engaging with your European audience, since that's obviously what you run when it comes to content? Like, what do you find resonating the most?
Yeah, I think the problem with many US companies coming to Europe is that they don't have a strategy for how to localize. And localizing is not just about translation, you know. There are so many different, you know, concepts that exist in certain regions. There are different wordings based on, you know, regions in countries. So I think that's a big problem. Companies are trying to, you know, rank for certain keywords, but they aren't really talking about what they want to know there, to be honest.
And that's not just our struggle going to Europe, because that's how we, just so you know, that's how we see it. We're kind of like, we're going to Europe.
Yeah.
And I bet you're like, bro, I struggle with this and I'm in Europe, right?
So exactly.
How do
exactly.
you personally think about going into the French market or the German market? Or like, how do you think about going to market in that sense? Like, how do you localize?
Yeah, I think it's really about getting this deep knowledge before doing anything, because it's so different. Usually in the past, I've, like, you know, done what we have been successful with before, shipped it to another country, just hope for the best, and it never works.
We do the same thing, but the whole continent. We're just like, hey, exactly, we're America, we'll hope for the best.
And I guess also it's also impossible to get that deep knowledge before you actually start selling in that country and getting customers, right? So it's kind of a chicken and the egg problem here. So I think is really what is working is to, you know, we need to have a local sales organization, to be honest, in the region where we're going to be, and we need to start selling. Maybe we don't have to start marketing right away, but we need to start selling, and we need to start talking to the customers. And I would think that initially that would be that specific marketer's job, to really make sure to talk to the customers that we get in, all of them, just to get a feel for the market, where they are, what they look at, you know, all of those goodies.
I love that. Now, here's the problem I've seen, because I do this, right? Biggest brands doing IPOs. They don't listen. Here's what I mean. They hire, like, the cheapest person they can find in each of these countries. And that's their kind of, like, their French marketing leader.
Yeah.
But that person, right, they hop on the calls. They have a tiny little budget. And I feel like they kind of almost belittle them. And they just kind of – they don't really leverage them. So how can we work with those country leaders better? Because I've been in many of these meetings, and it's obvious that they're only, like, using this person as, like, a signpost, as, like, a figurine to be like, yeah, we have boots on the ground in France. But they're not listening. They're talking, but nobody's listening. So how can we better listen and maybe set up that dynamic so it actually results in better results?
Yeah, I think one interesting thing that we are working a lot with now is, you know, how do we leverage our, you know, private organic LinkedIns, for example. If we hire a country manager with a relevant network of, say, 50,000 people in that region, that's a huge window, right, to broadcast our message.
Like an influencer. Like you're almost hiring a country influencer.
Exactly.
That's really, really clever.
To be honest, I think we need to think more in that regards. And it's the same when we are building our own networks, right? Why are we building them?
That's brilliant. That's really brilliant. And, you know, I hadn't really heard someone say it like that. Now, if we talk regions, and this is important because I think we're not very good at this. How would you rank European countries on kind of revenue potential and when you think about it? So you're in Sweden. Let's say you've got UK, and I know that's not – you've got other parts of the UK. Let's say UK. Sorry. Yeah. Yeah, UK. You got France. Yeah. You have Germany, Italy, Turkey. Like, how are you prioritizing? How do you kind of see it? Because, you know, you sell a similar audience to myself. You have a product similar to many. Like, at the end of the day, every company in the world has salespeople. So which countries have the most salespeople? Let's just be simple, right? So like, how do you rank those regions and countries in your mind when you're going to market, like with budget and capital?
I would for sure say that the UK and France are ahead of all other countries in terms of in terms of where they are with their software and so on. I would say they are very digitalized markets in comparison to the rest of Europe. I would say in comparison to US, they're still behind, but in comparison to Europe, if we look at Germany, for example, huge revenue potential.
Yeah,
but
biggest
the problem
GDP.
Is,
that's why I'm like
exactly,
blown away right
exactly.
Now.
But they are also a super traditional market, right? They are also, you know, they are very much into German companies as well. It's super hard to.
Very nationalistic.
Yeah, exactly. It's hard to get in there, to be honest. Which is a little bit the same in France, maybe. But yeah, France and UK is for sure the biggest potential for us.
Wow.
And then we have countries like Spain and Italy that have a lot of people, but they are not as digitalized. So I think they are also a few years behind UK and France even. So we'll probably get there later.
That's so interesting because the way the Americans think, like just honestly, we think GDP equals like digital. Like that's just how, like honestly, like if you were to say, I thought you'd kind of go like UK 1, Germany 2, France 3, but you're putting Germany lower just because it's such a harder market to break into. I find that very, very fascinating. What's an amazing market that no one thinks about that's like way better than anyone really gives it credit for?
It's probably the Nordics, to be honest. You know, the GDP is pretty low, but we're getting pretty digitalized and pretty fast. We have a lot of, you know, we have a lot of companies that are growing like crazy from here. And I think that is speeding it up, to be honest. So I think it's I think a lot of companies now, I know for a fact that companies like HubSpot and Salesforce are trying to grow in the Nordics, but it's super hard for them. Since I used to work at a local CRM company in Sweden, where very often we stood against Salesforce and HubSpot and won based on that local presence. And it's hard for companies like them to have the local presence, of course. They have world domination, but they can't really have world, local presence.
Wild. So let me tell you a little bit about America and how it's changed, in my opinion, in the last 5 years, Adam. And let's get a piece of sour candy because I think you'll find similarities. Okay.
Yeah.
So when I first started, agencies would grow by entering local markets, and location was huge. Companies wanted to buy from agencies that were around them. Very normal, especially for buyers over 50 years old. So kind of that C-level buyer was very much like, come to my office, we'll meet with you. And pre-COVID, my team and I was in a plane every week. Because if I wanted to win a deal and I knew I was competing with other local agencies, I needed to go to their office. I knew if they went to the office and I didn't, I would lose.
Yeah.
Now, not the case.
Yeah.
Nobody cares where my company is located. My whole company is fully remote. Every city doesn't matter. In Europe, in Nordic, would a company make a mistake if they thought they could just have a presence in Copenhagen and it would translate? Do they need to be in each? And do you have to have that local presence, you think, really in Europe? And do you have to go into the office to win the deal in your mind?
I don't think you have to go in the office. I think in a sense you need to have the local presence. Yeah. I think you can, be digital in the way you sell. You know, we have all of these amazing digital tools these days. So I don't think a personal meeting in that sense is necessary. But I do think a local person is necessary, and that local feeling. You can't really create that in any other shape or form. But I do think, as the change you mentioned, I think that is happening also here, but only slower.
It's going to happen. I love this. I've never been able to talk to someone like this.
It's funny. We see everything that is happening in the US, and we know that it's going to happen here as well later on. Yeah.
No, it's brilliant. How does direct mail work in Europe? Are you doing direct mail right now as part of your strategy? Are you able to leverage that? Like, what's kind of your cheeky stuff? You know, you talked about field marketing and events. Are there other types of like kind of growth hacky, cheeky, like?
I would say, funny that you mentioned direct mail. We have actually been utilizing that quite a lot, and are going to do that even more. Since it's so much, it's easy to stand out that way, right? It's not many people doing that. And the great thing is we can really show off our brand and do something crazy differently. And also, it's easy to do that in an ABM targeted setting. Find our mostly valuable target list, make sure that they remember us, then we can call them.
And I think it creates that local feeling once again, right? Because you're using the local postal system, you're connecting. What technology, if I wanted to enter the European market, like in America, we use Sendoso. It's a customer of ours. Sendoso is kind of that top product. For you all, like what product are you using for direct mail and ABM coordination?
To be honest, we haven't been using anything. We have been doing it on our own. I think that's also a thing. It's like, it's hard to make it personal when using something like Sendoso or all of these kind of, you can send like local groceries or whatever, but you can't really get the finish, to be honest. Well, that's at least what we feel. You know, if we can just make, handwritten notes where we write something fun or something like that, that is how we stand out. Not that we buy, something, a German food in Germany, for example, it's not going to work. I really think that's, if you leverage this as a volume tactic, you probably need some sort of solution for it. But we're mostly doing that in terms of, ABM, trying to leverage our dream customers, bigger customers, and so on.
I love it, Adam.
But I think one thing to mention in Europe is also GDPR, which is always a tough one. We talk about this all the time with our US team. You know, many US marketing teams do a lot of these volume email sendouts, you know, brand awareness plays. It's impossible in Europe. We have this, you know, you have to give explicit consent for anyone to contact you in that regards.
Kind of nice.
Yeah, it is. Exactly. We're getting back there. We are so nice. but I think that makes our job a lot harder. You know, we have to make sure that people, or maybe not harder even, I would say we have to focus on creating value. So at some stage, they will give us consent and then we can, you know, get them in the loop, but we can't do anything beforehand. That you can do in the US, for example. You can do this crazy...
Oh, it's a wild, wild west, man. It's
yeah,
wild.
Exactly.
You can do anything. And it's normal. Like I have to have settings on my phone so I don't get, you know, I get 30 calls a day and I have to send non-call IDs to the spam automatically because I would literally, my phone would ring every moment of the day because of how crazy.
And I guess that's also something to realize if you are a US company going to Europe is you have to know these things because otherwise it will get really expensive.
really quickly.
Yeah.
Adam, I literally just got my MBA in EMEA marketing. This has been phenomenal. Thank you so much for being on the show. If people want to learn more about you as well as the organization, what's the best way for them to find out?
Yeah, you can find me, Adam Holmgren, at LinkedIn or visit GetAccept at getaccept.com.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, this has been phenomenal, Adam. Thank you so much for being on the show. And can't wait to put this out there. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. See you later.